what we have spoken about until now, except for last 2 weeks ago, which was Yotzim in a cloud to speak about Nazis and Germany and Hitler and Amalek. But what we established till then was that everything in the world basically is Torah. Everything in the Torah is there to teach us something. Nothing is just there for plain information. And because the world is just the physical manifestation of the Torah, then it would follow there's nothing in the world that's not there to teach us. And the world is a means of, just as much as the Torah is a means of coming closer to Hashem, the world is also a means of coming closer to Hashem. And we gave, however, the following caveat, and that is that the Torah helps guide you towards seeing the Ribbono Shel Olam. As long as if you want that, then the Torah will help to guide you. Hamor Shema Marzi L'Mutav. When it comes to nature and the world, there you don't have that guidance system. There, unless you have the right perspective and you have the right guidance, you could come from the world, from nature, science, to kfirah, to total disbelief in the Ribbono Shel Olam. And that's why, even though there are two paths, this is what we did last time that we were, even though there are two paths to the Ribbono Shel Olam, the path of Torah always has to come first. And you have to be able to see nature and science and everything else through the eyes of the Torah in order to be able to see it properly. And then when you do that, you have the proper guidance of Torah, you have the proper lenses on, and you're looking with those proper lenses, then seeing nature, science, and history can become a tremendous vehicle to bring you closer to the Ribbono Shel Olam. And therefore, it's not just nature and all the creations that have this effect, but everything that happens in the world. Everything that happens is Dalet Amos Shel Halacha. Right? Everything that exists in the world is Ein LaKadosh Baruch Hu BiOlamo El Dalet Amos Shel Halacha Bilvad. And we always like to explain that in the following way. If you understand it simply, literally, it seems to limit the world very much. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu only considers important in his world the four Amos where somebody learns Torah. And that rules out a lot of things in this world, because a lot more in this world than just the Dalet Amos where people learning Halacha. And if that's all that God considers important, then why did he create everything else? Why didn't he just create telephone booths and Shulchan Aruch so people could sit and learn Halacha in their own little telephone booth of a Dalet Amos? And there's all this world out there, Lachara, it's a lot of extra baggage that's not necessary. So what we've explained in the past, what it means is that the concept of Dalet Amos is a halachic concept. So it has to do with kinyonim. That if you're walking in Rishus HaRabim or other areas and you see something that's ownerless, so in order to make it yours, you have to pick it up, make some kind of kinyon on it, bring it into your Rishus. But the Rabbanan made a special takana that people shouldn't fight. That if something is within your Dalet Amos, and you see it, and you claim that it's yours, you don't have to pick it up. Dalet Amos is a kinyan itself, being in your Dalet Amos, in certain places, not everywhere. And the concept behind it is, why is that the case? Why, if something's within your Dalet Amos, is it yours? Because that's the area that you control around you. It's the sphere of influence you have. If you lie down and on the floor and make yourself a radius to a circle where you're the radius and your feet are at the middle of the circle and your head or your arms, so that you can control Dalet Amos around you. A circle with a radius of Dalet Amos, it's you. And that's what you can control. So the concept of Dalet Amos is the sphere of influence around something. So that's what it means. If you want to know how God looks at his world, limiting it to nothing, excluding nothing, including everything, the birds, the animals, everything that happens in the world, is all Dalet Amos Shel Halacha. If it's not a halacha openly, a mitzvah, an aveira, it's within the sphere of influence of halacha. everything is there to teach you something positive about how to live your life in this world, how to be inspired, how to come closer to the Rabbanu Shalom. That's what the world is. It's all Dalad Amishal Halacha. And that's why it says that if a person's walking and he's learning, and he stops learning, and he says how beautiful that tree is, how beautiful that field is, he's Mishchayev Benafsha. And I once wanted to say, and then somebody told me that my Rebbe said it. I don't remember hearing it, but maybe I was half asleep, and he said it, and it sunk in. And then subsequently, I found that Rav Shamshon Frohor says something very similar. That is, a person is walking, and he says, how beautiful is this tree, right? U'matzik mi mishnaso va'omer ma'yofa in ilon zeh, ma'noa nirzeh, harizeh mishchayev v'nafsho. You're liable to a death penalty for doing such a thing. See, normally you learn, because he stopped learning Torah, so he's liable to a death penalty. And even though he's admired nature, but stopping learning Torah to admire nature is not a positive thing, which we could explain our way also, that first has to come the Torah. If you stop learning Torah to observe nature, the nature could be very, very negative. We have a different shot. The problem is not that you said how beautiful is the tree or whatever. You're supposed to admire nature. You're supposed to learn from it. It brings you closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But if you think that that's called stopping learning, then there's a problem. If you understand that that has to be an extension of your learning. The learning extends to understand how to learn things from nature, from trees, from fields, or whatever. Then you have a right perspective on nature. But if you think that nature and learning Torah are two separate things, they have no connection to each other, they're two different, completely different domains, then you're Mishchayev Benafsha. So, therefore, in order to really understand, just like to understand nature, and if you understand nature improperly, it can lead you to Kfira, so too history is part of what the Ribbono Shel Olam created this world to have, right? The things that happen in the world, and they're guided by the Ribbono Shel Olam, and they're affected by how people have free choice too. And therefore, what we learn from history is a mitzvah. Zechor Yemos Olam, Binu Shnos Dor Vador, Sha'al Avicho V'Yagedcho, Zekeinecho V'Yomru Lach. The way I understand those psukim is the following. Zechor Yemos Olam, person has to remember history. Just as much as you have to learn nature, and you have to learn scientific things or whatever, and be aware of the world that the Ribbono Shel Olam created, you also have to be aware of the things that happen in the world, both historical things, current events. You have to know what's going on, because those are also manifestations of the Ribbono Shel Olam's hashgacha, of the Ribbono Shel Olam's control and divine providence in the world. But there's two things that you have to do. First is Zechor Yemos Olam. Remember what happened. Right? Learn the facts. But then Binu Shnos Dor Vador. Then you have to understand it. It's not enough just to remember the facts. But you have to understand it properly. And you understand Shnos Dor Vador. Shnos, Shana, is also change. Right? Understand deeply the changes between different historical things. Why did this happen here? Why did this happen here? Why didn't the same thing happen in this situation, which had the same factors as a different situation, which had seemingly the same factors, and yet something different happened? So that's Bina. That's understanding it, not just knowing what happened. Why did it happen like that? What can I understand from it? What does it teach me? And therefore, you need two ways of getting the information. Sha'al avicha v'yagedcha. Ask your father, right, who experienced these things that happened before you were born, right, or you didn't experience. Ask the people who were there, and they can tell you what happened, right? So ask people that you trust, like your father. And if he's not your father, your grandfather, if not that, then a historian who way back recorded these things and know what happened. That's good enough to ask the people who experienced it. But then, Zekeinecho v'yomru lach. But then, after you get the facts, now you have to understand what's the meaning of those facts. What are they supposed to teach me? What am I supposed to learn from this? That you ask the Zkenim. That you ask Talmid HaChomim. That you ask Gedolei Yisrael. And V'yom Ruloch, they'll tell you. And that's why, in the first one, V'yagetcha, Haggadah is like Haggadah's Eidus. It's like testimony. They'll testify what they saw, right? Whether it's your father or somebody from previous generations, like your father. Somebody who was there can testify. The Yom Ruloch, and now to explain to you what it's all about, that you have to ask the Skenim. Now that you have the facts, you have got the testimony, now you need somebody, v'yomrulach. Another idea is v'yagedcha is lashon kasha, kasha kegidim. V'yaged means what's it called, harsh things. Usually, history is very harsh. And if you hear the testimony, it's very, very hard to swallow a lot of times what you hear, especially periods of history like the Holocaust. But once you hear the understanding, what am I supposed to learn? Why do things happen like that? And the Rabban Shalom is involved, and the Rabban Shalom is kulo tov. Then it's the Yom Ruvach. Amira is Lashon Raka. It's soft. It's easy. It'll be easier to understand, to swallow and to accept if you have the deeper understanding about it. If you only hear the facts sometimes seem very, very hard and very harsh. But if you have the explanation, it helps to temper it and makes it make it more soft.
Second definition of Agada, and it has a bit related to Pesach Agada.
What? How does it relate? I don't know. That lashon of Haggadah is in the Torah. Kol somer lebeis Yaakov is saged lebnei Yisrael. Chazal said that the saged is lashon kasher kegidim, things that are harsh. So I'm going on that. That would be Pesach Haggadah. I don't know. The again, Haggadah can mean Haggadah's edus, or Haggadah can mean a strong, harsh way of saying over something. Okay. Therefore, what I want to speak about tonight is Taka, the difference between seeing history through just the eyes of observers, or seeing history through the eyes of Jewish observers, through Torah observers, through Gedolei Yisrael. I'll bring a few examples. Let's take what's it called, Hanukkah and Purim. Okay, whether how to view a historical occurrence and how to celebrate it or not to celebrate it, it needs Torah eyes, because even what seems to be very obvious that Hanukkah and Purim were things to celebrate, it took time, even at a time when they were Nevi'im, to be able to decide how to celebrate it, if to celebrate it, if to write Megillas Esther, if not to write Megillas Esther, right? And that was the time when there was still Nevi'im. The Anshei Knesset HaGdolah was comprised of Nevi'im, the last Nevi'im. And it took a long time, right, before it solidified exactly how to commemorate it and how to look at that period of history properly. Hanukkah was the still Sanhedrin. And also, it took a whole year before they decided to celebrate Hanukkah, and how to celebrate Hanukkah, right? And those are things that seem to be very simple. And yet you needed Das Torah, you needed the eyes of a Sanhedrin, the eyes of Nevi'im, to decide how to celebrate and if to celebrate it. Another example is what to celebrate. Right? There were many occasions in history that were very, very joyous occasions, but they never made a yontif to celebrate those things. Right? When they conquered Eretz Yisrael the first time, when they went back to Eretz Yisrael in the time of Bayesheni, when they built the second Beis HaMikdash, they built the first Beis HaMikdash, they celebrated on the spot, but they never made a historical commemoration of those days. There was never a holiday every year that they celebrated for the building of the first Beis HaMikdash, or the conquering of Eretz Yisrael the first time, or the conquering, or the inheritance of Eretz Yisrael. There's reasons for that. It's not for now. We'll discuss making new Yomim Tovim and celebrating Yom HaTzmaut. Then maybe we'll go into the details. But I'm just showing you that not everything that seems obvious of how to look at history and to make the proper conclusions of how to celebrate it or not celebrate it is much different than if you look through human eyes and you look through Torah eyes. Another good example, I think, is the following. There are two occasions that the Rabbanan commemorated historically. Two historical occasions that the Rabbanan did commemorate. One with a fast day and one with a yontif. And if you look at it, at both of them through human eyes, I would have done just the opposite than what the Chacham did. And those 2 days are the following. The first one was Ches Teves. Okay? The 3 days in Teves were fast days. We know of one of them, Asara B'Teves. But there were two others, Ches and Tes. There were three fast days in a row, the 8th, the 9th, and the 10th of Teves. And the 8th of Teves was because of the following historical occurrence. On the 8th of Teves, a miracle happened. The Chachamim were asked by Talmi HaMelech to translate the Torah into Greek. And they were put into separate cubicles, 70 of them, and they, 72, the Gemara says, from the Sanhedrin. Right? The Targum HaShivim is, the Greek report was only 70. I don't know why they don't have, we have 71, 71, where in the, what the Gemara says. Here was only 70. In any case, each one was put in a separate cubicle, told to translate the Torah into Greek, and independently they all made the same changes in order to avoid Echil Hashem, because the Talmi would not have been able to understand. For instance, they wrote in Greek the equivalent of Elohim bara Bereshis instead of Bereshis bara Elohim, because Bereshis bara Elohim can mean Bereshis created God. So if you understand it improperly, you could come to terrible mistakes. So they wrote it in a way that was more clear in the Greek than it was in the Hebrew. They wrote what the equivalent in Greek of Elohim bara Bereshis, started with the Ribono Shel Olam. They changed the word Arneves to what's it called? Aruch Raglayim, I think it was, something like what? Right. What? Raglayim? Who? Kalat? I don't think so, but okay. I don't think it's what I said either. Something else. In any case, why? Because his wife, Talmi's wife, was named Arneves, the equivalent of Arneves in Greek, not in Hebrew. I mean, it wasn't Arneves, or her name was probably, Bunny Rabbit or something.
Bunny.
Right. So, something in Greek. So, they changed it in order that they shouldn't think that they put something in. And all 70 changed it exactly the same way without conversing with each other, with no communication between them. This was a miracle, mamash a miracle. And here was the first art scroll, Chumash, right, that is translated into Greek, which many Jews didn't know Hebrew. This was in Alexandria. The Jews were estranged, and here was a chance for Jews to learn it in Greek. If I was there, I would have made a yomtiv. If Nace happened, and here's a chance that the world should be able to appreciate the Torah. And the Chachamim made a tzom. And they said it was as difficult as the day that the luchos were broken. And again, I'm not going into now why it's not like that. I just want to bring out the point that it is like that. And another day, the Chachamim decided, historical occasion, that they should commemorate for all generations as a yomtiv. That was the day that Haruge Beitar were brought to burial. Right? Beitar was the last stronghold of Bar Kokhba. This was about 70 years after, 50 years after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. And they were hoping that Bar Kokhba would be Mashiach, and that he would push back the Romans, and they'd build the third Beis HaMikdash already. And the last stronghold of Bar Kokhba was in Beitar. Hundreds of thousands of Jews, the Gemara said, were there. Men, women, children. And that's where Bar Kokhba met his death, along with all these hundreds of thousands of Jews. And the Romans were so cruel, they didn't let their bodies be buried. And they left them exposed to the elements for, what I saw somewhere, 3 years. 3 years. And this happened on Tisha B'Av. It's one of the five things that we mourn on Tisha B'Av. The destruction of Beitar. And for 3 years, they weren't able to bury their bodies. And there was so much blood that the goyim around fertilized their vineyards with the blood of these people for 3 years. That's how much blood there was. And then 3 years later, 3 years and 6 days later, on Chamishasar Ba'av, on the 15th of Av, they were able to bury these people, and a miracle happened. Their bodies didn't decompose. So they made a new brach and benching. Fourth brach and benching is only rabbinic, basically because of Haruge Beitar. And they made a bracha that if you drink wine at a meal and you have better wine that follows lesser wine, you make a bracha tova metiv. And they made a yontif women used to go out looking for shaduchim that day. Tremendous yontif, which Chazal say, Lohayu yomim tovim liyisrael kechamishasar ba'avak yom ha-kippurim. It was equal in yontif to Yom Kippur. Right? The simcha of kaparas avonos. Now, if I would have been there, I would have made a tzom. I mean, these people didn't come back to life. They just were able to bury them. And the day you rebury somebody, it's a yom of evil. So, here also, so a miracle happened. But a miracle happened by the Targum HaShivim also.
And this didn't happen on that day. It happened in those 3 years, right?
What? Well, no, the nace that they were able to bury them. That they were able to get to them was a nace. The Romans refused to let them be buried. They were able to finally get, I don't know if they got permission, or they were able to get to them and bury them. That in itself was a nace. Two nisim. One is that they were able to bury them, and the second one is their bodies didn't decompose.
So that wasn't on that day, right?
No, it was on that day too. And that's the day they discovered that nace. That's the day that they saw it. Right? It happened. Not something didn't happen, but on that day, right, it was that nace was still kayim, and that's when they discovered it.
All that time, there's no access to them.
No. That's what I said. For 3 years, if they had access, they would have buried them before. For 3 years, they had no access. The Romans, the Dafka, wouldn't let them bury them. And then a nace happened that they relented, or I don't know exactly what happened. The Romans gave them permission, which was a nace, or they were able to get and do it without the Romans' knowledge. Romans are still there, right? And they had decreed that they're not going to let these people be buried. So mamash and nace happened that they were able to be buried. That was one nace. That's why they made hatov ha-metiv. Hatov, that they were able to be buried, ha-metiv, that they didn't decompose. So mamash, two nisim, for that they made brachas, and they made what's it called, a yontif. Again, I would have seen it completely different. What they made a tzom, I would have made a yontif, and what they made a yontif, I would have made a tzom. So how to learn, and what to learn from history, and how to appraise it, you need more than just the testimony of what happened. You need the eyes of Torah to be able to tell you what happened, and how to look at it. Another thing that is important, and that is, even in hindsight, you can't. It's hard to be, when it comes to history, even a Monday morning quarterback. You know, in hindsight, to know, you know, what was right, what was wrong, because history, whether it's good, bad, how to look at it, right, how to understand it, and what to learn from it, doesn't depend on how successful things are. You can see that something was successful, that doesn't mean necessarily it's a good thing, and that you should learn from it and copy it or whatever. It may be very successful, maybe very bad. Christianity was very successful. Very successful. And it's not necessarily something good. And there were things that were very, very good things that were miserable failures. That never got off the ground. Right? That failed completely. And that doesn't mean that they were bad. It means that for whatever reason, the Rabban Shalom wanted these things to succeed, even though they were bad, and he didn't want these to succeed, even though they were good. And the proof to that, I saw from Nechama Leibowitz. I don't usually quote her, but she said something, and she wasn't her word anyway, it was somebody else she quoted, I don't remember who. But she said the following. She said that Shimon and Levi, Shimon and Levi did something that Yaakov Avinu at the time thought they were wrong. They went and they killed out the city of Shechem. And Yaakov Avinu said, you put the sword in the hands of the Goyim around us to kill us. You made us vulnerable. Because now they'll say, well, if you can kill innocent people, then we can kill you. Right? You're a bunch of bloodthirsty murderers, so why can't we start up with you? So you made us vulnerable. In the end, miracles happened again. And the Rabban Shel Olam protected them. And not only that, they conquered the city of Shechem, which became something that Yaakov Avinu eventually gave to Yosef. So all of Yaakov's fears were unfounded. Nothing bad happened from it. Just the opposite. Only good things happened from it. And yet, when Yaakov Avinu was ready to die, he cursed Shimon and Levi's anger. L'chari, he should have admitted that, okay, I thought that bad things were going to happen. I thought that you put us in danger. When in fact, the Rabban Shel Olam showed differently, and he protected us, and there was absolutely no danger, and only good things came from it. So he should have given the bracha. He should have admitted, okay, maybe I was a little harsh with you before. He didn't. He said, Ararapam ki yazdem, rasam ki kashasam. He basically cursed their anger. And she quotes, I don't remember who it was, not one of the classical Mefarshim for sure, she quotes this person who says that none of the kinuyim of the Rabbanu Shem is Hatzlacha. It's not one of God's names. That's not how you judge things, whether it's Matzliach or not. Now, God has a name, Rachum, Chanun, those are positive things. Hatzlacha is not necessarily positive. It could be Matzliach in terrible things, and it could be failures in good things. And therefore, Yaakov Avinu didn't relent. You did something wrong. And looking back on it, it's still wrong. And even though nothing bad came out, things are judged not on how they work out, but what in principle what they are. And if you put Jewish life in danger, right, even if you do it with good intention, and you do it to preserve Jewish honor, that's what they answered him, HaKizon LeYasa Sachenu, she let our daughter be Hefker? We had to do something. We had to protest. That's very nice. But the Maisa, Jewish blood is more important than Jewish honor. And if you put Jews in danger in order that you should hold Jewish honor, that's not proper. That's not proper. So, therefore, what's it called? You can't even judge things after the fact by if they were successful or not, whether they were good or not good. Right? Haman. Right, wasn't successful in what he wanted to do. Hitler was, unfortunately, not successful in his entire plan, but unfortunately, to a great degree, he was successful. So you have to know how to look at things and not necessarily judge them by if they were successful or they weren't successful. And another thing is that you can't see things isolated and really understand them. You have to see history as an entire picture of one panorama. And if you just isolate things in history and don't see how they relate to things that happened before and things that happened after, then you really don't get a clear picture of what it's all about. Right? There are things that happen in history that seem very insignificant. Yet if you see them in the panorama of the totality, those insignificant things are very significant. I mean, a woman got up one morning to take a bath. No big deal, right? And she finds a little baby floating in the Nile. And she decides to be a nice person, and she decides to save this little baby. Now, if that's all you would have heard, then yeah, very nice, you know, no big shakes. Nice thing that happened. If you understand it in the light of the implications of what that had on history to come, right, that woman did something astounding that day, right, saving Moshe Rabbeinu. The whole world changed because of that action. And sometimes things seem to be earth-shaking, and in the larger picture, they're really insignificant and meaningless. So therefore, you can't isolate historical things and see them properly. That's why we don't have a national day of mourning for individual tzaras. We only have national days of mourning on Tisha B'Av, basically, for Churban Beis HaMikdash. Because all the tzaras of Klal Yisrael, we basically mourn on that one day to put them into perspective of history. To see them all as a panorama of Golus. Golus started with the Churban Beis HaMikdash, and it had its roots already from the time of the Midbar, from the Meraglim. Right, that's the night they came back and gave their report, and the people cried. And therefore, all the other tzaras of Klal Yisrael, we don't have separate days to mourn them. There's no national days of mourning, right, except with Minig of Talmidei Rabbi Akiva, but that's also, we've explained many times, not as mourning of the tragedy. It's a different idea completely, which we're not going to go into now. But days of mourning for tragedies, all are incorporated in Tisha B'Av. All the things in history, the Spanish Inquisition and the Gzeiros Tach V'Tat, that didn't necessarily happen on Tisha B'Av, and the Crusades, all of these things are mentioned on Tisha B'Av. They don't have separate days for them. Communities had days to commemorate their specific tzaras. That yes, but Klal Yisrael is a klal. There is no national mourning days for any tzara except for Churban Beis HaMikdash and the other things that were related to it. The things that finished off Churban Beis HaMikdash, like Karugei Beitar, but they're all the same thing. They're all on Tisha B'Av. And all the other tzaras, whether they happen on Tisha B'Av or didn't happen on Tisha B'Av, are all commemorated on Tisha B'Av, in order to look at them not as separate things, but as part of a total picture of what Golus is. And the same thing goes with our Yomim Tovim. They all are celebrations, not of specific instances, but how those instances fit into Jewish history. There's a much larger picture that has to be taken in consideration before you can mourn or celebrate anything, because you have to know how it fits in with everything else. And sometimes the insignificant things become significant when you look at them as part of a whole picture, and sometimes significant things become insignificant when you look at them as part of a whole picture. And they don't seem to be that important anymore. And if you don't see things in their clear perspective, again, how Gedolim see things, they say that Chasam Sofer cried when the nations of the world, France was one of the first who emancipated the Jews, gave them equal rights, which they took away from them pretty soon. But they gave Jews equal rights. Chasam Sofer cried for two reasons. One is, he said, that part of what has protected us in Golus from assimilation is the fact that the Goyim don't want us to assimilate. They won't let us assimilate. And therefore, even if there are Jews who would love to assimilate, but they don't have the option, they don't have the choice. Right? They're held in their place by the Goy, as we've mentioned many times from Chaim Volozhiner. Either we make Kiddush or the Goy makes Havdalah. When we don't want to make Kiddush, but then the Goy makes Havdalah and he anyway separates us. So that was a positive thing, even though it was very, very sorrowful and very painful. But in the larger picture, it was a positive thing for Klal Yisrael that we were held from assimilating with the Goyim because of the attitude of the Goyim. Now that Jews are given, what's it called, freedom and equal rights, many Jews would use it to be freedom from the Torah. Not freedom to observe the Torah, freedom from the Torah. As in many places where Jews enjoy freedom, like in America, most Jews use that freedom to free themselves from the shackles of religion and to assimilate completely. So that is a sad thing, says the Chasam Sofer. Secondly, he said, give a marshal. He said there was a king who banished his son to an island because of something that he did. And one day, a group of people land on the island, and they tell him they were sent by his father, and he wants to build him a beautiful palace on this island. They brought all the materials, and they built him this beautiful palace. And the son started to cry bitterly. So they said, "What's the problem? Your father obviously, you know, cares about you. He wants to build you a beautiful palace. It makes you comfortable here." He said, "Up until today, I was always hoping that my father was going to change his mind quickly and bring me back home. But now that he's invested all this money and time to build me a palace over here, obviously he has intention of leaving me here for an extended amount of time. Otherwise he wouldn't have put in that." So he said, same thing. "As long as I saw that the condition of Jews in the world was really, really rotten, I assumed that the Ribbono Shel Olam was going to take us out of this pretty fast. But now that the Goyim are starting to give us freedom and making it comfortable for us, it's obviously the Ribbono Shel Olam has this intention of staying here for quite a while." So, again, how to look at things. The secular eyes look at the emancipation of the Jew by the Goyim as a very positive thing. And from Torah eyes, it's not necessarily all that positive. And therefore, a person has to have a certain amount of clarity to be able to see things properly, and that clarity comes from being steeped in Torah. And if we can't be those kind of people who are steeped in Torah and have Das Torah is simply a person makes decisions and sees things based on the color of lenses he's wearing. You're wearing rose-colored lenses, you see everything rosy. If you're wearing green lenses, you see everything green. That's what was in your mind. It's like a computer. Whatever you put into the computer, that's what the computer uses to compute what comes out. If you put in false information, then you'll get out false information, right? Because the computer will use the information, the data system, the database that you gave it, right, to compute your answers. So if you put in a faulty database, right, then you're going to get answers based on that faulty database. So most of us whose minds are filled with a million things that are not Torah, things that we've seen and things that we've learned and things that we've come to conclusions because of life experiences. So when we see things and we have to make decisions in anything, we compute it based on all that's stored in our brains. So the conclusions we come out with and the ideas we come out with are a mixture of a lot of things. But somebody whose mind is filled only with Torah, right, who's either from the time that he's a youngster been immersed in Torah and Torah only, and that's what his world completely. So his whole das, his whole database is Torah. Or even if it wasn't when he's a child, but he's been able to cleanse his mind at some point and totally make it Torah, right? That kind of tshuva, the Rambam says the main tshuva on Yom Kippur is to take out of your mind all the things that you saw and heard when you were a kid that were not Torah-dic. That's the main tshuva. If you can't do that, right, not, that's not the Rambam, it's the Kuzri. If you can't do that, then at least do tshuva on what you did wrong. That's second best. And the Rambam says, Taka, that tshuva is not just for actions, it's for ideas and midos that you have to do tshuva for also. Because that's what leads to these actions. That what leads to your conclusions. And therefore how you function in this world. So somebody whose mind is totally filled with Torah, so everything he sees and everything he considers and all the conclusions he makes are based on one thing and one thing alone, Torah. So his assessments of things is Torah. That's Das Torah. That comes only from a person whose totality of mind is Torah. That's why it's good to go to a Gadol to ask him about things that he won't find anywhere. So you don't look at your Shulchan Aruch and say, oh, the Shulchan Aruch speaks about your business deal or your this or that. There's no place in the Gemara you can point to and say this. But his whole chishuv, how he comes to his decisions, what information he uses to build his decisions on is all Torah. So Mela, what he comes out with is Torah. So therefore it's important not only to learn history and to know what happened. That's important. Zechor Yemos Olam. And that's Sha'al Avicha V'Yagedcha. But it's also important to be Nush Nostar V'Dor, to understand it. And since our understanding is far from being what really the understanding is, so then you have to ask, Sha'al Avicha Zekeinecha V'Yomrulach. Ask your Zekeinim, Zeshekana Chachma, people whose entire Mabat, their entire perspective is Torah, and they'll explain to you the information that you have. You may have to fill them with the information, but once they hear the information, they'll be able to compute it with their minds and tell you what it's all about, what you're supposed to learn from it, how you're supposed to look at it, how you're supposed to deal with it, how you're supposed to commemorate it, or if to commemorate it. All of those things are what we're going to be talking about, but we'll try to see them through the eyes of Gedolei Yisrael, and not just through the eyes of witnesses to them, or people who learned the history of them, or whatever, but people who both had that testimony, and people who either witnessed it themselves, but also the benefit of now putting it into the computer, which has a database of Torah. That computer is Gedolei Yisrael, and see how they interpreted these things, and what lessons we're supposed to learn from it, and how we're supposed to deal with it, and view it, and that's basically the derech that we're going to be using.